And you are now entering the Big Daddy's podcast.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Big Daddy's. We have myself, as always, and Big Boy here, and our special guest, Zach Blair. Zach, welcome.
Good to see you, guys.
You as well. Zach, now, you and I actually, and Jackson, we all connected through Anthony Rick after he released the handbook and we had him on. He quickly reached out and said, guys, I have someone I want to connect you to, as you recently wrote a book called The Father Code. So we're pumped to have you here. Can you elaborate a little bit on your book and just dive right into that?
Oh, 100%. And just with Anthony, he's such a good dude, isn't he? I've been able to catch up on the podcast here. He's been on twice, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And I think I've listened to both of them, but I've listened to a bunch. And just want to say, like, you guys are killing it. You guys are doing such a great job. I love the depth that you all are bringing. And I know, Jacob, we got to talk about this a little bit, but I really want to validate, like, that what you guys are doing is really needed. Thank you, like, from the bottom of my heart.
Oh, we greatly appreciate it. Coming from someone like yourself with five kids, that means a lot, because I'm only got one. So you got like five times the experience that I got. So it's like, it's extra validating.
Hey, they're just forming a hierarchy at this point right now. You know, they're taking care of themselves.
I'm looking forward to that moment when they're self-sufficient.
Yeah, once they start like wiping and washing, like that's like a game changer. It's a complete game changer for you guys, you know? Now, you guys are almost there though, right?
Jackson.
Getting warmer. I mean, my son, like, he's officially potty trained, but he still poops in a diaper. He's like, I gotta go. Like, give me the diaper.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at. Yeah. He'll turn four in December.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Yeah, he'll be fine. He'll figure it out.
And then I got a 6-month-old as well.
Oh, awesome.
I'm trying to catch up.
You said a 2-month-old?
Yeah, I have a six-month-old and almost 4-year-old.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah. That's a pretty good 3.5-year gap, right?
Yeah.
My math is right.
And Zach, I guess there's seasons for stuff. I feel like I'm getting my butt handed to me right now. Is that in that age range, does that sound about right to you? Like a 6-month-old and 3-year-old working you hard?
I remember when we went to 3. Okay, so 3 was by far the most, well, 1 to 2 was difficult, but I think that 3 was very difficult, and it simply was because our 3-year-old came out with boxing gloves on and chewing a cigar. So we started calling him tough and tender because he'll punch you in the mouth and then he'll pray for you afterwards.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Is his name Robert De Niro?
Yeah, basically. That's hilarious. He just was super tough and he didn't want to sleep. And I felt myself just getting older. I'm like, my body's deteriorating, getting 3 hours of sleep a night.
Wow.
And man, I felt it then, you know. But then he turned and he's actually our easiest right now. So
how old is he now?
It's tough. He's 8 years old.
It's okay, it's right funny on. You say that because I'm the third, like, out of my family, 3 boys. And my mom said I didn't sleep through the night until like a year and a half. And maybe this is me self-proclaiming, but I would say I'm the easiest kid now. So, yeah. Or I was the easiest kid. So
yeah.
It's like you give them a run for their money and then you're like, it's cool. They've had enough.
Yeah, I realize like my youngest boy. Okay, so we have 3 biological kids just for context. And then 2 foster children living with us right now. We absolutely adore them. So with the biological children, my youngest biological, Judah. He just everybody's scared of him. You know what I mean? Like, just scared of him. But he lives life his own way. And he came out fighting. Like, I remember we were zipping his jacket up one time. And he's like, zip it. Like, you want me to zip it faster? And I'm like, what? Like, you're just getting your words. You don't have to fight for everything in life. Then I have videos. I look back and the oldest is like whacking balls out of his hands and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, like he did have to fight a little bit more than I noticed at the time. But I think that's what it is, right? You come out and you're like, I got to keep up with everybody. Now the youngest for us, Judah, he is like ripped. He's got like a 6-pack. He's got pecs because he's trying to keep up with his brother who's 5 years older. You know, it's It's fascinating, just the psychology of it.
Yeah,
you know. Well, so like, you were the baby Jacob.
Oh, I was, and I feel like for me, I had to resort to verbal warfare a lot because I was so much smaller than my brothers, and I was like, I can't physically beat you up. And so I look back at some of the things I said, and I'm like, man, I'm really not proud that came out of my mouth. So I've had to apologize to my brothers before. So that's I understand.
Doing well for you now.
Yeah. But
yeah, you know, aimed in the right direction now.
Yeah. But cool fact, Judah, tell me what you're, I mean, Jackson, tell me what your second kid's name is.
Yeah, there it is. It's Judah. Judah Lyon is my youngest, man. So
nice.
Great. Very cool. Like,
yeah, there's something about that name, you know. If you're running a little bit. Oh, but man. 6 months old, and you feel like, you were saying you feel a little bit like just you're getting your butt handed to you.
Yeah, I am. And I have two really good boys, too. I think it's just, I'm just wondering if, man, maybe the timing's just a little bit haggard right now. But, man.
Yeah, it gets better.
I guess Zach and Jacob, like, I think, like, I work really hard to be a good dad, and I love being a dad. And, like, I think it's really hard. You know, so I think about people who, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where I'm going with this. People way, and I'm a weirdo, but people way less well adjusted seem like they're pulling it off awesome. So man, it's something.
Well, we have a saying in my family. I try to teach my kids this. It's not as bad. It's never as bad as it feels, and it's rarely as good as it looks on Instagram.
Whoa, so good, bro.
Yeah, that's got to be true, because right now Cal is starting his toddler phase, and he's just so mean sometimes. I'm like, dude, I don't like when you're like, and I only have one, and so I can't imagine, you know, some older.
Three?
He Cal's a year and a half.
Oh, he's a year and a half. Okay,
yeah, year
okay.
And a half.
See, the 3 year old, I noticed that with like three, my wife and I say three was tougher than two. They say terrible twos, but like three, they really develop their will. But maybe he's getting it out of the way early. You know,
he could be. I hope so, because man, he's already such a like bully sometimes. So he's not actually a bully, but he's got some personality. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, gosh.
Now, my firstborn, this is so funny. Like, and he'll admit this. Like, he doesn't mind that this is on a podcast at all. He thinks it's funny too. But like, he remembers when it was just him, and those were the days of his mind. You know?
Yeah.
He's funny. You know?
Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I love that kid.
And so he's 13.
Yeah, he's 13. He's wonderful. He's drumming in our church, and like, he's got a good heart. He wants to be a missionary, and he's like, Dad, like, I want to be a crazy missionary. Like, he wants to go to like remote places of the world. You know,
whoa,
already, like, that's in his heart. I'm like, man, so we're fostering that the best we can.
Yeah,
yeah, that's rad. So
yeah, it's a blast.
I think that birth order really like matters. You know, as far as like, you know, how it determines behavior, personality, things like that. Like, Jacob, I do feel like you are the classic baby, you know, in a lot of ways. You know, you always talked about how you had like really big emotions and had to learn to like control rage and stuff like that because of like age and size difference, things like that, you know. But yeah, Zach, I feel like a father of five, is there a lot of like self-fulfilling prophecies going on with like birth order stuff? I'm a middle child. I'm one of six. And like, kind of in the middle. I got two younger, three older, and like like, I feel like a middle child, like when I look at it on paper. Is that a real thing, or is that a little bit of both? Like, what do you think, man?
So there's a comedian online and on Instagram called, his name's TJ Therrien, I think. Have you seen him yet? He's worth a look up. Totally clean, but he does birth order psychology humor. It's basically it. So he acts as each of the firstborn, middle child, and baby, and that is, for the most part, extremely accurate with our biological children. Now with five, it's been really interesting to see, because there's a large age gap. And what they say with birth order psychology is, if there's like a 4 to 5 year age gap, then the firstborn starts over. So like, my sister's 7 years older than me, and I'm like a baby, but I'm also the firstborn. I don't really remember her being in the house as much, you know, with me. I was more of an independent, you know, firstborn, you know, only child, basically. So we see that in our house. And it's interesting with our foster daughters coming into that environment where that's already established and it's been established. I can't speak too much, but I can say there's a 4 year gap in between the oldest and our youngest. So that child is typically a another firstborn in the home. And I can even say she's a she, yeah. So she is just like my oldest. And it's really funny to watch. Like, they both come down the stairs at the same time in the morning and they look at each other and they're like, I want to be the one that says good morning first. You know, like, you just read their minds. It's hilarious, you know? And yeah, so I really do see it. And the second born is just an absolute blast. She's like kind of a creative puffy cloud of glitter, just like our biological second born, you know. Wow. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, that is very cool.
And so I guess your youngest son, then he just kind of falls into the baby role again. Just, is that the spot, the 8-year old?
Yeah, it's to be determined, I think. Like, it's, I think so, based off of what they're saying, but I'm kind of watching and just, you know, wondering myself, because he's really maturing and taking on a big brother role right now too. But these are also our foster children. And I think he's had the most difficult time adjusting to having foster children in the home, because he was a baby. Now he's not the youngest anymore. And that's been really interesting to navigate with him. But he had a little bit of a, he has a very, very good heart, but, you know, a couple tough moments, and that's natural. I think any family who's doing what we're doing is going to go through that. But we really had to get that out of him, because he doesn't want to, I don't know, Jacob, were you the same way? He doesn't want to share his emotions very much. He just kind of wants to keep it in, but then it comes out, you see the emotions all over him, you know, but he doesn't really want to verbalize them.
Well, it's funny you say that, and maybe it's something you can allow. Maybe it's something we can dive into of what you've seen, but I know for me, and just kind of getting better at processing my emotions as I've gotten older, I know being younger that my brothers would always make fun of me of like, hey, you know, oh, you're crying, or you're whatever, you're screaming, or X, Y, and Z, and like letting my emotions out was like, I was a baby. And so I wasn't good at letting my emotions out, and I would always try to stuff them in and like keep them in. And so Jackson, you've heard me say this plenty of times before, but I don't cry almost ever. And not that I try to be macho or anything, but it just doesn't come out. And so as I've gotten older, I feel like it's harder to like verbalize my emotions. So I can see where you're coming from with that and relate to your youngest and that. And so I guess for us with Callahan, we're trying to be on it where Hannah's really good about her emotions and like verbalizing them and saying how she's feeling, that we don't want to ever, downplay what he's feeling, like really helping him express what he's feeling and working through it. Cause even if he can't figure out those words of what it means at the time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And he's young. You're getting a good start on that stuff.
She will learning from me trying to, always keep that in. Cause I hated crying. It's like, oh, you're angry. You know, when you angry cry and you're like, you're not actually sad, but you're angry. Well, people be like, oh, you're a baby. And some, for me, I was like, oh, I can't cry anymore, being the youngest brother. Yeah. So I'd always stuff it and stuff it. So, but I mean, what have you noticed with Judah and that?
Well, along the same lines, we've noticed that Mad covers Sad, because Mad's less vulnerable than Sad, right? So as a man in our culture, it's like, it's more acceptable to be angry than it is to be, you know, really sad. Like, you shouldn't let anything, like, even as I counsel a lot of men, spiritual guidance, you know, pastor, and I hear a lot of men say the same thing. They say, if I don't let it affect me, then it won't affect me. And I completely disagree with that. So what they do is they shut their emotions down, and they actually don't grieve or enter into a space like where they allow God to just like heal that area of their heart, you know, and they just, you know, enter into a time of just like, okay, what am I really upset about right now? They said they just shove it down. And so, you know, that stuff builds up, you know? So I noticed that with my son as well. Like, he gets mad really quickly, and then he does like kind of mad cry very similarly. And I'm just like, dude, like, it's all right. It's all right if you're upset. Like, it's totally fine. Like, you can share anything with me, and, you know, it's a safe place. I'm not gonna embarrass you, and I'm never gonna make fun of you. And it's taken a while for him. Like, we even had a conversation the other night, and he didn't want to tell me what was on his mind, and it was something so simple, but he doesn't want to naturally share his emotions, and we're trying to work through it, you know. But You know, I think by the time he graduates high school, we're gonna make headway on this. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of some of those things you're like, yeah, they're gonna get this. You know?
Yeah. You're gonna keep working on it for sure. I can imagine. Do you like any pointers you could give for dads that may be dealing with that? Or not even dads, just moms, dads, parents in general.
Yeah, what I found is that okay, so I believe that I was a youth pastor for a really long time and worked with college students, 20-somethings, and in noticing the security of certain girls within our youth ministry, girls with our college ministry, men, boys with our youth ministry, men with our college ministry. Fascinating that the dad is to teach his boys how to be a man, but mom's job is to teach them to be secure in their manhood. And then women, for young girls, it flip-flops. So dad's job is to teach, or mom's job is to teach her daughters how to be a woman, but dad's job is to teach them to be secure in their womanhood. And so even tonight I was able to get out with one of our foster daughters, just me and her. And she's, from my understanding, she may not have never had anything like that before. And just to see the security of, okay, we're in a public space. She clings to me in that moment, and she feels safe with me, right? And my job is to provide that safety for her. But then before, you know, Lauren was getting her ready and, you know, just, you know, getting her excited about spending some alone time with foster dad, you know? And that's what I noticed with my boys, like with Judah and with Noah. Lauren, she can get out of them so much more than I can. And they feel like the sense of safety going to her. And I love that, you know? Yeah. And she opens the door as well for me to be able to speak into their world. Like, hey, your dad really knows what he's talking about in this area. Because I think the boys want to prove themselves to me sometimes. And I'm like, hey, you don't have to, but they want to, like, kind of, it's the testosterone, you know, like, dad, I'm a man, right? You know, really fascinating to me.
Wow. I almost made the stepbrothers reference, but I was like, I don't know if it's appropriate for.
He's, I don't like, even know what that is off the top of my head.
He's like, she's already, or she's had the old bull, but now she wants the young buck. You know what I'm talking about? Jackson does.
Oh gosh,
yeah.
It's a terrible scene, but no, that's really cool. And actually, I definitely see where you're coming from, because I feel like I can, especially growing up, I could talk to my mom more about stuff. Which I don't know why. I don't know why that cultivated in that regard, but it was just more natural, maybe. Or maybe being the youngest, being a mama's boy.
Yeah. Yeah. And my daughter will come to me and talk with me as well. Like, we just have such a close relationship, you know? So yeah, the security comes from the opposite.
Yeah. I've never thought about that. That is very interesting. Now for the foster daughters, how long have they been with you all?
2 months.
2 months.
Going on three, actually.
Really, three. I know that's a sensitive thing where you can only say so much.
Yeah.
But how's that been going?
It's been going amazing. I mean, amazing in so many ways, but it's complex, right? Because you feel for the girls, like they want to be with their mom, and it's a complex situation. And you know, we're developing rapport with mom, and you know, it's just such a tricky, it's such a tricky situation. So you have the complexities of emotions. You know, we fall in love with these girls and realize that, hey, they could be gone tomorrow and we could actually never talk to them again, but we've shared 3 months of our life and made so many great memories with them. They have truly bonded with our family to the point where they pointed pictures and they're like, why am I not in this family picture? Mm. You know, and that's like, that's actually like really good. And, you know, we're going to change our family pictures just so they know they have, they're like a part of us, and yeah, they always will be.
Yeah, come on. Live them
all. What's that, Jackson? I'm sorry.
No, I'm just commenting. That's beautiful, man. I love that.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Like, we love mom. We love the kids. And, you know, it's complex. Like, we would be obviously open to long-term adoption with really any child that would come into our home that we would say yes to. But what that means is that mom doesn't ultimately get better. And so we get asked that a lot. Like, best case scenario is like, mom's back to, you know, who she truly is. And we're trying to support her in that too, you know, and we feel like, hey, this is a big opportunity, not only to serve these girls, but to also serve mom.
Yeah. I got one question, and then Jacob, let's swing to the actual questions, man. So Zach, what's wild, man, is what I've learned about fostering is that the goal is not always that the foster parent would adopt. And more often than not, it's a case of you're providing housing and love and care and nurturing on an interim level, and the win is getting them back to the parents. And I understand that, but that's also like really challenging too when you hear about the circumstances. How do you reconcile that? And where are you? I mean, clearly you guys moved along in the process either way, but man, how do you, because I had heard that for the first time like 6 months ago. Someone came and presented some things to us, an incredible organization. But yeah, what are your thoughts on that? Does that make sense, or is that just a wild thing?
Yeah, you know, I reached out about that for just some help because, you know, we truly, truly love these girls. You know, they're absolutely amazing, and they've grown so much, and they're thriving despite the circumstances that they are in. And I reached out to somebody I know who has fostered a bunch of kids who really did it well, and obviously put a great group text. This is an older lady. She runs the foster organization that we are a part of. And so, you know, I sent Lauren and she a text, and I just said like, hey, like this is going to be tough whenever they go back. And she said, yeah, you're going to cry. And then, you know, and then you'll think about it. You'll continue to. And, ultimately we know like what we're doing is going to impact their life forever. We've had moments where even our biological children have just said, hey, you know, I'm so sorry that you feel this way right now. Can we pray for you? And wow. The girls are like, yeah. And then our kids start praying for the girls.
Wow.
And my wife and I are back and we're like, wow, that's unbelievable. And it, you know, it's just been a mission trip in our home. And I think if we look at it that way, you know, it's like when you go on a mission trip, you know, it's going to be temporary.
Wow.
But your heart's always going to be there, you know, and building rapport with mom is with the goal of, hey, if she ever needs help, she can just call us and we'll be there, you know? And that's our heart. Like if she's just like, I just need 2 weeks or I just need a week or whatever it is, like, yeah, we'll take the girls. We would love that, you know? So.
Yeah, man, that's rough.
It's complex.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can imagine. Cause I guess with adoption, which you and I talked about a little bit previously, it's like you're adopting the kid, you know, they're yours and it's a done deal, but this is many, 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 many more layers deep. Like you said, the next day they could be gone and you don't know from that. Man, I guess I could ask so many questions about adoption. So I don't know. I don't want to get too deep into it. So I'm going to pivot a little bit on you, but I think
there's
a lot of knowledge, maybe on a future episode, definitely, or even later in this podcast, we can dive into it more and share on. But I did want to ask you, what's your favorite thing about being a dad?
Wow. I love that question. I love bringing out the gold in my kids, you know, seeing the gift that's in them and validating that and watching the light bulb click on and putting them in environments where not only I believe in them, but other people believe in them and watching them thrive. So for instance, like my son, he wanted to play drums for you know, he was like 2 years old, you know, he was starting to play drums, just like messing around. And he finally put the work in. And I'm a musician as well. And I'm like, we get to play together, you know, and just have some fun around the house. And I'm like, hey man, like you got to put some work in though, to be able to play live, you know, and he just accomplished the goal. And wow. he's really doing well, you know, just seeing the gold in them, seeing that, I'm a big hugger. I just absolutely love to snuggle with my kids too. So, I mean, that's a simple one. Also, I'll give you one more. This is actually like my favorite thing to do with the kids. I do dad movies with the kids. Okay. So, have you guys heard of Vid Angel? Have you heard of that?
Vid Angel. Yeah. I haven't.
Okay, so it's basically like a filter.
Because you're not a Christian. You can, go on, Zach.
Yeah, you can watch Rambo and filter out like all the F words and the major scene where like the guy falls out of the helicopter and show it to your 8-year-old. You know what I mean?
Like, so it's like a 3-minute movie then.
You know, yeah, it skips entire scenes and it's pretty funny. The kids are like, "What happened there?" But they still love that they watched Rambo. You know, it's totally fine at home too.
Sure.
I push it a little bit sometimes because, you know, like when we grew up, I was more like 80s, 90s kid. I'm a little older than you guys. There were no boundaries, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we didn't wear helmets. You saw a kid wearing a bike helmet on the street. You're like, man, he must have strict parents.
Yeah.
You know? He might have fallen once or twice too much, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But my kids love that. Like, we'll watch a dad movie together. They're like, "Dad, is there a good movie, you know, that we can watch?" And nostalgic, go back. It's like one of my favorite things to do.
That's so cool, man. Besides Rambo, what was another one that stood out to you? That you're like, "I can't believe I'm watching this with them right now."
My daughter is in softball. She loves A League of Their Own.
Okay, right on.
Then my boys, I introduced them to Neverending Story.
Yeah.
That was fascinating. Yeah, you know, I was definitely afraid of the wolf when I was a kid. They kind of liked that. They thought it was hilarious.
Huge question. And I now the whole world's going to find out how much you've traumatized your kids or not. Did you let them watch the scene where Artex...
Yeah.
Oh my God.
100%. 100%.
Wait.
And it did not traumatize them at all. They're like, at least it didn't show our text go under the water. And I was like, well, that's a good point. I wish I would have thought like that when I was a kid. But that was, cracked me. That got you too, Jackson?
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of a darker moment in cinema besides that one.
Wait,
if you asked me on the street, I would immediately think of that.
Can you elaborate? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Unpack the scene if you're comfortable, man.
So Atreyu, right? Atreyu is like he's going through the swamp of sadness.
Yeah.
You know, he has his horse, and his horse gets overwhelmed by sadness. But if you get overwhelmed by sadness, you start to sink into the swamp, and you just see this horse, just like he's like trying to pull. He looks at it. He goes, "I never realized this." He's like, "You stupid horse! Come on, move!"
Yeah, please, Artex, go sleep.
What movie is this?
It's Neverending Story, bro.
Man, Jacob, I gotta look this up. I am so uneducated.
But Zach, I had older brothers and sisters that showed me the way. My brother, in fact, has a half sleeve of the Neverending Story on his arm. So big deal.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, he's in.
Oh man. Yeah,
great movie. All right,
Neverending Story. I'll look it up after. I apologize for being such a scrub.
Jackson, I think your brother and my sister would be like best friends then.
Okay. They're into the 80s.
I have to tell her I met somebody who has a brother who has a sleeve. And she's gonna be flipping out about that. That's such a great idea.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm in. Wow. Okay. Everybody look that up with me, because if you're born in the 90s like me, you just got no idea. Well over your head.
But the thing is, my kids love it because it's all creative. Like, you know, it's all creative. I mean, social media came and killed creativity. So everything's a remake. And now you look at that Never Ending Story, you're like, who thought about this? Who fought this thing up?
I know. Well said, man. Wow. Got me critically.
So VidAngel, that's the move. That's if you got to show your kid a movie.
Yeah.
All
right.
It doesn't have everyone, you know, but. And then if you watched it enough as a kid, you know, when to mute it or scream real loud.
Cover your eyes. I saw something on the TV the other day, and Cal was sitting there. And granted, he's 19 months old, and I just covered his little eyes. And he starts like smacking my hand out of the way. And I was like, chill. He didn't know what was going on, but he just like wanted to watch the screen. He's like, get out of my face.
Well, yeah. It's easy to make fun of VidAngel. I currently don't have it. My sister has it. And Zach, in my heart, she has 6 kids of her own. And she's all about it.
Wow.
And it's easy for me, I think, gut reaction, because I've never showed my kids something that I would really need it yet. However, you know, the scriptures do say guard your heart, because everything you do flows from it. Right?
Yeah.
So with that, I mean, if I could detour for a moment and just like, man, like how serious do you take that with your kids about you taking on ownership of guarding their hearts?
Oh yeah, dude. So it's a crazy time that we live in. As a youth pastor, I used to be all about public school. Send your kids into public school. I kind of judged homeschool parents, you know, because I'm like, your kids are going to be out of touch and, you know, all of that. then the day came where there's an indoctrination happening within our school, and there's experiences within for my children where they're getting exposed to things that are biblically, ethically immoral at a very young age. And so one of the things that I've tried to do is I want to talk to my kids about things before their friends talk to them about things. Like when we talk about sex, right? You want a 9-year-old really telling your 9-year-old or 8-year-old or even 7-year-old on the bus, like about what sex is? Like, absolutely not, right? But the issue is there's no filter out there, and kids are kind of just like showing things, like, you know, they have phones, they have all this stuff. And man, the change in culture over the last 15 years since I was like youth ministry to now being a lead pastor, it's been just completely different. So my daughter was in school and she got in trouble for taking her Bible to school, and she was in kindergarten. Okay. Now my daughter is like really sharp. She said to me, I said, "Baby, what'd you say?" And she said, "Well, I asked my teacher, I thought you said I could bring any book." And the teacher said, "Well, just not that book." Right. Wow. So she could have brought any other book. It didn't even matter, right? But just not the Bible. And so Nora's like, I don't understand why can't we just talk about God? Like, why can't we? And she's like, I want to go to Christian school. I want to go to a place where I can pray. I want to go to a place where I can talk about, and she would talk about faith with her friends, you know, and they would stop her. They're like, you should probably quit that, you know, like. In so many ways. And so, you know, Pittsburgh is different. Like, we are definitely not the Bible Belt up here. So I don't know the differences, like, where everybody is listening, but where we are, it's pretty cold and rigid in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So we ended up putting our kids in a classical education school. They're registered as homeschool, but they are definitely not homeschool. We absolutely love them so much. We're going to be starting in high school here starting next year. That's going to connect to that in some way, like a sister school.
Yeah, right on. We had a guest on the pastor Pastor Jacob's wedding, Owen Hughes. He has a church plant. I believe it's called College Station near University of Pennsylvania. And, I was talking to him about, like, you know, when I have kids, you know, man, I'm going to raise up little missionaries, and you know, they're going to, you know, go out and show the gospel. And he was like, oh yeah, cool. So you want to feed them to the sharks is the way he said it. And I was like, whoa, oh, and chill, you know, he was like saying, like, we don't like expose our kids to this stuff just so that, you know, they might be a light. No, instead we raise them up, we train them up, and then we send them out, you know? So, man, what a interesting tension that is in a tough thing for every parent to balance. You know, not everyone has the privilege. You know, I was homeschooled. My sister homeschools all 6 of her kids. And, you know, I know that, and what a hard thing, a hard move that must be for parents to make. Cause maybe some parents want to homeschool or want to send their kid to a Christian private school and they can't. But I guess, Zach, you know, how would you encourage a parent that is making that decision? You know, because I could have my strong opinions. You can as well. And Jacob, you can as well. But, you know, how would you shepherd somebody in choosing that for their kid?
Okay, so I'll start with being really, really direct. And then I'll back it off a little bit and be more pastoral. And I found that usually works in pastoring men. So, you know, if it comes to the heart of my child, I will sell everything I have to make sure that they're fine and they're protected. Like, that's my number one job as a father, to protect them spiritually, emotionally, and physically. And that does mean that I'm okay with being dangerous. It doesn't mean that I want to be dangerous, you know, but have the capacity of it and the control. Dangerous with my words, dangerous with even like the word as a sword, like, man, like, I'm going to war for my kids in prayer, right? But then also, like, physically jump into danger. And we've had to, you know, we've all had times where we've had to do that. And so I'll be direct at, like, if you can't afford it, man, you got to cut everything out to protect your kid and get them in an environment that's going to shepherd and guard their heart, because it's a 16,000 hour war. They're in that school for 16,000 hours, and they're in church, like, what, statistically an hour and a half a month, somewhere around there, you know, there's no keeping up with it. And then walking back as a pastor though, you know, there really is hope in every situation. And so, you know, I think about the, you know, the circumstances that you would probably think about too, you know, a single mom who's just trying to make ends meet and like figure life out. And I don't even know how single moms are doing what they're doing. Like, it's an absolute unbelievable. I have kids, you know, by myself for like 3 hours, and I'm like, okay, I really respect single moms. But
they do. Oh, yeah.
Man, you know, where they are, they're doing the very best they can. And what I've noticed is that God will always bring in someone to help, and God will always provide, even if it's like, oh, we really want this, but there's provision right in front. So like if somebody's fatherless, I've noticed God usually provides a father figure in their life, you know, and in every circumstance he brings replacements. And so ultimately it's a matter of, man, can we trust God in those spaces, that even when they're in the fiery furnace, you know, that God's going to protect them and they're not even going to smell like smoke, you know? Especially as fathers, like what I've learned as a pastor too, like through the years, you can't combat the father spiritually. Like if the father is leading his family, then the family's going to follow. Statistics show that. My anecdotal evidence shows it. It's like, I couldn't pastor against a father unless there was like a major move of God in a kid's life, you know, that was just like a major aha moment. Usually predicated by some kind of pain and God meeting him in the middle of it, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said, strong.
Yeah, that's good, because Cal is so young, but Hannah and I've already been talking about like, when should we really start considering like, what school do we want to send him to? Do we want to just go with a public school, or do we want to try to go to a private, I think you call it classical education, or, and thankfully there's a lot of options around.
Or boring school.
Send him to, I might just send him up to Pittsburgh. I might just send him to Pittsburgh, you know, for all I know.
That was like a real thing, guys. It still is a real thing.
Boarding schools? Yeah.
Yeah. And like in the '70s, even like summer camp, they sent their kids to summer camp all summer. You're like, what?
So crazy.
They just did not care who was raising their kids, I guess.
No.
They don't want to be with their kids.
So that's good though. I mean, I hope it, you know, triggers people to think a little bit about that, because like you said, public education has changed. Even, I mean, I graduated high school 10 years ago this year, and I'm looking and I'm like, man, did it really change that fast in 10 years? Or even Jackson in the last 5 years, when you and I, or right when I graduated from UCF, you and I were meeting up at O'Galley High School, and we were, you know, doing a Bible study at lunch with those kids. Mm-hmm. And even in that last five or 6 years, it's like, I don't know, it's trending in a different direction. So I hope people give it some thought. And like you said, you know, maybe they can find a way to make it happen. But
yeah, what I found in this is that schools are now teaching values more, and values really should be taught in the home. That's my belief, you know? Mm-hmm. And so now they're saying, no, your parents' values are wrong. And that's where Lauren and I really drew the line.
Wow.
Yeah. We're like, hey, like, no, you don't get to undermine our parenting here. Yeah. That's my job to teach my kids that.
So Zach, something you were talking about a little bit ago, I wanted to actually ask a little more about your perspective on it. Cultivating your child's interests and their desires. Do you feel like we as parents really have a big hand in that? And I guess I asked because I saw actually before you even mentioned it that your son was drumming. I saw you posting that on Instagram and I thought that was super cool. I've even mentioned to Hannah that I was like, man, it'd be really cool if Callahan kind of drumming. Or, you know, I've been doing jujitsu lately because I used to wrestle in high school. And I'm like, man, it'd be really cool when he gets older if he would come do jujitsu with me. Or like, I like shooting bow and hunting, and like, it'd be cool if he wants to come do that with me. So do you feel like we even have a chance in cultivating what our kids are interested in? Or is it just like, you know, you see him doing something, you try to be supportive in what they're interested in?
Yeah, I don't know if it was the same for you guys growing up. My dad read my book and he said to me, Zach, I realize I've never told you I'm proud of you. He said, just so you know, I am. And that was a moment for me. And I was like, oh yeah, dad, like I know, like I didn't want him to feel bad about it because we have a great relationship and I really love my dad, but he did feel bad about it. And that's okay for him. But
it really meant a lot to me. And I realized there's a lot of guys out there that I've been friends with. I was just talking to my friend group, right? Should Dad ever say that he was proud of you? 90% of them, the answer is no. And, you know, I don't know if that is a regional thing where I am, or if it's a generational thing, or what, but
my dad's never said that. Yeah.
Yeah. And aren't we searching for that? You know, aren't we, even when it comes to that fatherly figure, I found myself in spaces where I carried almost an orphan heart. Like, I just want to make my dad proud. And this guy's like a father figure, so I just want to make him proud. And then you find yourself even backing off on your values because you're like, oh no, I just want to make them so proud that I'm going to do anything to make them proud. And that means, you know, and then you're like, oh man, that's not even who I am to lead that way, or to make that decision as a leader, or whatever it is. And those with an orphan heart often make really good leaders, because we want to work hard. We want recognition in some way. And I think cultivating our children's true gift is to look them in the eyes and say, I'm proud of you. And what do you love? Like, let's give it a shot, you know? And, you know, so my boys want to play hockey. I'm going to just put this out there. If you have boys who want to play hockey, it's really expensive, right? So, you know, there's ways, like, I let's be realistic, like, to make the NHL, it's probably not going to happen. I want to keep them in a rec league as long as I can. I don't want to do traveling hockey because it's like $20,000 a year. I don't have that, you know, like, what are we going to do? So I was like, hey boys, I'll give you $1,000 a year and an IRA if you guys keep staying in the rec league. And I showed them the rule 72 and how much money that would be by the time they were like 50. And they're like, yeah, we'll do it. I bribed them out of it.
Kidding.
It's a great trick, you know.
That's genius.
So it's like, okay, so you know they're probably not going to play in the NHL, right? There's realism that we have to bring, but we can aim it in the right direction. I'm not putting my arm around and say, listen, son, you're not going to play in NHL, so you're going to play in this rec league here. You know, there's a better way to go about it. And it's on both sides. You know, hey, this might not be your gift. How many kids, Jackson, have you had who were like, I really want to be a worship leader, but they were completely tone deaf?
Oh, yeah. It's so awkward when they tell me, like, hey, like, so who do I talk to about, like, trying out for the worship team? I'm like, I wouldn't do it, you know, so.
Yeah.
That ain't it, Chief.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah. You know, and that's our job, you know, to validate and to bring out the gold and to also say, hey, you got to work in this area, you know?
Yeah. Well, like you said, you challenged Noah to, you did challenge him, like, hey, if you want to play drums, you got to, you know, you got to put some effort in. As he got a little older, you're like, encouraged him of devoting himself to the practice if he really wanted to. You know, you didn't shut it down like, oh buddy, you're not too good, maybe you should put him down. It's like, no, if you want to get better, you gotta practice.
Yeah, this is what's gonna, like, coming up with realistic goals and watching them hit it is beautiful. You know, it's a beautiful thing, because then they think, oh, I really can do this.
Building a level of self-confidence as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I've been thinking about myself that I'm definitely putting off what you're saying, but as well, like, if he's doing something, that Cal is playing something, that a video game or reading a book that I maybe am not the most interested in, well, I'm going to do it anyway. You know, I want to be present with him and hanging out with him and being like, mm-hmm. hey, this may not be my favorite thing. He's not going to know that, but it's like, you like it, so I like it, and I'm going to do it with you.
Yes.
As long as it's not something absurdly dangerous, like who knows what, but you know what I mean? So I'm looking forward to that, whatever that is. I think there's probably a part of that I'm hoping if I have him do the fun things that I like with me, and he's like, oh, dad likes and dad thinks that's cool. Well, then, like, I think that's cool. But I'm sure whatever it is, I'll have fun doing it as long as it's with him.
That's been my experience, you know, because our kids, if we have a close relationship, they want to be like us. And, you know, they're looking at us as, okay, this is the model of a man. This is what men do. And there's a natural desire in them to do what their dad is doing. I remember when I was a kid, you know, we had the little wishing wells like all over the place, and you throw a little coin in. My wish was like, I wish to work with my dad. I just remember wishing to work with my dad all the time. And my dad worked whenever I was a kid a lot. And so I missed him, but there was an aspect of just, I just want to do what my dad's doing because that's what, he's a man and I want to be a man, you know? So there is a fun, that is fun. Like, they tend to like the sports I like, you know, and then if they like something, it's like, I like it a little bit more.
Yeah.
My hearts grow closer, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Jax? What do you think of that? Like, with you and Spencer and Judah Line?
Ask me the question directly.
Wait, ask it directly. Like, I don't know, just what I mean, I'm just seeing what your thoughts are on that, you know, your experiences with you and your dad.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's safe to say that I have a lot of father wounds, but one of the things that I always remember that my dad told me is that his favorite thing about being a dad was coming to our basketball games. And he didn't like sports, you know? So, yeah, I guess that's just what I was thinking about. Like that was like a really cool side to my dad. What about you though, Jacob?
Yeah. This is no shame at my pops, because I know he's probably gonna listen to this at some point. But he worked a lot, and I appreciate and respect that he did, because it really provided a lot for my brothers and I growing up in ways that I've, you know, recognized a lot older. But I don't think he ever really cared, like, if I liked video games growing up a lot, and like I wasn't interested in hunting or anything like that at that time. So I don't feel like he never came in and played video games with me, kind of thing. You know, in his defense, he probably got home super late from work and was exhausted, so he wanted to sit down on the couch and eat dinner or whatever it was. So I think there's that level of, like, you know, kind of going back to where I was saying, if I may not like it, well, I'm going to sit down and do it with you anyways. I'm going to make a point of it. But going back to the sports, I know he loved coming to our wrestling matches, my brother and mine, and watching us there and supporting us. And then now that I'm older and into hunting, it's like we can bond over that a lot, which is a lot of fun. So I think the big thing for me is just, like, whatever Cal likes, hopefully it's what I like. But if it's not, then it's, you know, I'm gonna bond with them in that anyway. Because my dad and my older brother, they're like two peas in a pod. They both were into hunting, and my, you know, oldest brother, first son, like, they did everything together. So maybe it's the first child thing, because I was a mama's boy. I mean, even like my mom would watch Florida football, UF football. I'm like, boom, I'm watching with mom. My dad never cared for football, so I think that, you know, maybe it's the mama boy syndrome.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. You know, it's fascinating though, because there is a level of, like, if you go back to the early 1900s, they said, don't pick up a crying baby because you'll make a weak child. Like, that was a well-believed aspect of parenting, you know? And then you go through the World War II generation, the baby boomers. I mean, how many of these guys had post-traumatic stress disorder, and then they came home and raised children, and, you know, were completely disconnected at times because of the pain that they had in their heart. And then, you know, you have, that's our parents then. They were raised by that. Like, my dad didn't even have a dad. And I remember being bitter at him, because, like, sometimes I just remember thinking, like, my goodness, like, he could have done things, and, you know, he could have been there and all of that. And, you know, honestly, I just had a realization one day, he was never taught to be a father. He never had a father. And the more you know about somebody, the more propensity you have to give them grace sometimes, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he did so good. He did one thing for me that his father never did for him. And that was, he never left me, you know, and I'm ever grateful for that.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I can relate to that so much from the standpoint of, if I had to choose between my dad and his dad, bro, I would choose my dad over and over and over again. My dad went way farther than he should have with what his dad gave him, you know? And I believe, I mean, like, you know, I've shared on other episodes, that's why I got the torch tattooed on my arm, is like, I believe fatherhood and obedience is, you know, you're taking the torch from your dad and your job is to go farther. And my dad, he took the torch. He did hand it to me. And I am grateful for that.
Wow. Yeah. I just had that conversation with my 13-year-old. Here's the thing. We are not going to be perfect fathers, but we can actually build rapport with our children by apologizing for the things we really suck at as dads, you know, and early, you know. So I've just been trying to make a habit of being like, hey, man, I remember this time that I flipped out and I screamed, and I want you to know that had nothing to do with you, but here was the circumstance and everything I was going through. And I'm really sorry that I did that. Will you please forgive me? And he's like, well, yeah, of course. And I told him, like, we watched Hook together. That was another dad movie.
Yeah, come on.
You remember the moment where he's like, you know, the kids are like screaming, and he's like, and he just like flips out on the phone and he's like,
"Oh, right.
I'm on the call of my life, you know?"
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I said, "Noah," I just paused the movie and I was like, "Noah, there's going to be a day as a dad that you're going to hit that moment when all the pressure is on you and you are missing it. And I want you to call me in that moment." I said, "I know that there've been times where I flipped out and, you know, flipped my lid or, and I'm like, man, do better than I did. And I'm here to support you, you know, always call me." Every man hits that moment where they just want to flip out. Right.
Right. Yeah.
That's a relatable scene as a dad, isn't it? Like you watch it now from a completely different lens.
I know. I that's so good, man. Yeah.
That was a classic movie.
Did you guys watch Mrs. Doubtfire from the lens of a father? Oh my goodness.
No, I need to watch that.
It was hilarious when we were kids. It's not hilarious at all to me right now. I'm like, this movie.
Yeah.
It's like it was such a good comedy back then, but now in today's landscape, not it's just a little different. No.
Yeah.
It's different. Yeah. It's different. Yeah.
But I love the scene in Hook when the little kid comes up to him and he, like, Robin Williams' face, and he grabs it and he pulls all the fat away.
There
and the
you replay. Are, yeah.
Oh, there you are, Peter. Yeah, yeah. A little chubby kid. That's awesome.
Guys, I'm telling you what, I had to put that reference in my book. I actually used that story in the last chapter of my book.
No way.
Dang.
That's a great segue. I mean, Zach, can you tell us what the book's called, where we can get it, what it's about?
Yeah, so it's called The Father Code, and the book is not about being a perfect dad, but being an intentionally connected dad. I feel like there's no such thing as a perfect father, but we can be connected fathers, and that's what I've noticed has really been a game changer. So through it, I just simply developed six principles that I've noticed through the years of fathers I look up to, and basically these are values, but I think they're six timeless principles that all dads can implement into their fathering. And I wrote the book to be short because, you know, talking with publishers, like, what, you know, so many words. And I'm like, what dad has time for that? That doesn't make any sense at all. You know, I want them to be able to read this in an hour and a half or 2 hours and then be able to carry it around with them and refer back to it. If men were like, show me the baby, don't tell me about the delivery, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted the book to be, right? So we went over six timeless principles. The first one is we never leave. The second one is we're both there and present, which you guys have both even talked about today. The third is we're more valuable than our paychecks. The fourth is our hands will bring love and not pain. The fifth is we stand guard to protect. And I mentioned that about spiritual, physical, emotional protection. And then the sixth is kind of complex. And you might have to, you guys are smart. You won't have to think about it, but I had to think about it. But like, we'll be an example in everyday life, but when we're not in repentance. And that's what I was even referring to earlier, just saying, I'm sorry, you know, to your kids at a young age, you know? So I feel like if we can implement those six values within our parenting, it can really give us a leg up and help us to take, just like what you're saying, our job is to just take it one step further. Like, yeah, our dads weren't taught to be fathers and they did the very best that they possibly could. And now, you know, we're going to take it one step further. Yeah. But I wanted to create like a guidebook to help men say, what am I going to do? See, here's the thing. Like when I talk to men, it's like, oh, I'm not going to be like my dad, but it's not enough to say, I'm not going to do this. You have to have a vision because a lot of, I'm not going to be a deadbeat alcoholic. Like I've heard that one. And then I find they're drinking themselves asleep, you know, at night. And like the very thing they said they weren't going to be, they ended up becoming because they were saying it out of a bitter heart. They didn't allow healing to take place in that wound in their area, in that life. And they didn't have a vision for what they actually could be. So instead of saying, yeah, I'm not going to be a drunk dad. Well, I'm going to be a father who shows my kids character.
Yeah.
You know, big difference.
Yeah.
Having a game plan. It's like, don't just say you're not going to do it. What are you going to do? What are the steps you're going to take to, as Jackson said, take it that step further as a father?
Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
And I'm even pumped to hear you share like just how digestible that is, and you create it in such a way. All right, cool. If they have kids, if I'm writing this to dads, I want them to be able to digest this, consume this, and finish a book for the first time in a long time. Yeah. So Zach, I'm excited to read it, man. I'm so pumped to read it. That gets me fired up.
Yeah, Jackson, you're right on. Like, let's just be real. Like, we don't have time to read 900 pages.
For sure. I'm looking at it right now. I got it next to my phone, and it's even thinner than the thickness of my phone. And I hate, yeah, which is perfect though, man. It's great. I mean, I'm not very far into it, but so far what I've read has been great. But it's funny, it's like, even as short as it is, I still haven't even finished it. So I'm like, man, I kind of stepped my game up. But, you know, like you say,
you're trying to read it. Well, you know, I want it to be a lifetime book for somebody, you know?
Yeah.
I want it to be something that they can continue, men can continue to go back to. And, you know, to keep the engagement as well, I weave the story of someone I know very, very dearly to me. They're two brothers who had, you know, diverging paths, essentially. The book is written from a Christian lens. Like, I'm a pastor, I'm a believer, and but it's applicable outside of that as well. But these men both had a really disconnected relationship with their parents, and one decided to change and the other one didn't. And so we followed the story throughout their life and just kind of weave it into every chapter to make it not just like digestible, but actually like, man, I want to know what's going to happen to this family next, you know?
Yeah. Well, I like how you said the digestible part and how applicable it is over your lifetime, because I feel like just from what I've read so far that I could come back and read this once a year. You know, I could put this on my calendar of like, hey, every January, every March, whatever it is, I could come back and read this, or, you know, remember one of the points of something I'm going through with Callahan of like, I gotta revisit that. It's great in that regard, you know, like you could just come back when you need it, dive back into it, get some wisdom and then apply and keep moving forward.
Yeah. Well, something timeless like that. I mean, I can't remember. I'm going to guess and say Paul said it. He's like, it's important I remind you of these things. Otherwise you're going to wander away from them. So, I mean, I love, like, if we just come back to these six pillars, like, that's a pretty good compass right there, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Fully agree. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely.
I believe in it. You know, it was in my heart for a while. And, you know, I started to write it. I don't know. It's probably about, I was a youth pastor and I was actually discouraged from writing it because people were like, oh, you're a little young to write a book on fatherhood, aren't you? You know, like, oh, okay. I'm sure you guys have never heard that, right? Like, oh yeah, you.
Well, it's funny.
You're doing a podcast on it, and you don't have like 10 kids, and you're not 50 years old.
Thankfully, we branded ourselves well enough, though. Or like, we brand ourselves as rookie dads, bringing on veteran dads, so that's how we get away with it. So
we like roast ourselves before they can roast us.
That's right.
I looked this up. You know, Dr. Dobson was like 41 when he started Focus on Family.
No way, did not know that.
He wasn't old, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's a farce, man. Like, you have a passion in your heart for something, go after it. And if people don't, everybody's gonna think their thing, you know. But usually, people will think like, oh yeah, you know, Jackson and Jacob shouldn't be doing this podcast. What are they doing?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So what podcast are you doing?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Who are you helping? You know, that's really nice that you can judge me from your basement.
Sure. Thankfully, we've really, I mean, I'm sure I just am blind to it, but thankfully, I think we've only had a lot of support, which has been wonderful. So, shout out to everyone that's kept their judgment to themselves.
Oh, good. I'm glad you guys haven't hit that too much then. That's good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Austin Prayer from this season, I guess we're breaking these shows into seasons. He talked a lot about Jefferson Bethke and what Jackson, I can't remember the quote, but basically, he's like, people were giving Jefferson Bethke a lot of grief of like, hey, you're having this marriage counseling class and like, you know, fatherhood courses and you're in your 30s. Like, what do you know? You know? And gosh, he said something really not witty and it's like a comeback, but it was just like, Jackson, do you remember what it was? Gosh, I can't remember.
No. All I know is I wish I was Jefferson Bethke.
He's a rad dude. Everyone just look up Jefferson Bethke and let him talk about it instead. But I think it was kind of along the lines of what you said, Zach, of just, you know, if it's in my heart and I feel like I have some wisdom I can share on it, then like I'm going to do that and bring it in people that, you know, maybe have gone before me to share it as well.
Yeah. And that's the key, right? And that's what I did with this book too. It's, I'm telling the stories of men. Like, one of the stories I tell in this book is of a father. Well, actually a girl that we helped through suicidal. She had extreme suicidal thoughts and we found out she had a chemical imbalance. And she was just like, you would have never predicted it. You would have never known that she had these deep thoughts. But man, like it was very severe. It was very serious. So she had opened up to my wife, and I asked her one night. I was like, hey, what kept you alive? Because she's doing really, really well now, and we're very close. I could ask her that. What kept you alive? She said, well, it was my relationship with my dad. Like I could never do that to him. And I just thought about it. This thought hit me. I'm like, oh my goodness, like. You have a legitimate chemical imbalance that needed medicated in order to get that back into balance. But your relationship, your connection with your father was stronger and it kept you alive. Right. And I was like, well, what did he do? Like, what in the world did he do? And that's what he would take her out to breakfast every Saturday morning. Mom was a health freak. And, you know, in his verbiage, this is his verbiage, not mine. She's a health freak. She's a health nut. And he would sneak candy to his daughter, you know, at night, and eat it, like, you know, in the dark of a room, you know, somewhere, and like hide it. You know, they'd play pranks on each other. He had this like weird thing where he was such a good man. So this is going to sound a little bit bizarre, but he wasn't bizarre. Like he would set a bubble bath after work every day, and he would use like dish soap, and he would fill the bubble bath up, and then he'd shut the curtain and be like, come on in. And then she would sit on the bathroom floor. He'd be in the bubble bath, you know, and, you know, obviously blocked by both the bubbles and the shower curtain, but they would just talk. She would just talk about her day and he would just listen to her and his connect. He was so good at it. He was so good at it. And that's saved her life.
Wow.
You know? So I just wanted to take stories of men who succeeded and weave them in as well. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's rad. That guy sounds awesome. Where can people get the book while I'm thinking about it?
Yeah, so Amazon, I published through Amazon. Just Amazon.com, look up the Father Code, Zach Blair, or you can go to the fathercodebook.com and get all the links right there, even learn more about the book.
Oh, heck yeah. Well, people, everyone check that out. Well, I don't know. I'm not a professional podcaster. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll go put in the show notes. It may not happen, but I'm pretty sure y'all can find stuff on Amazon. So I'm going to try to remember to post that in the description, but no promises.
That's hilarious.
We will. I'm going to hold you accountable. We'll do it.
Thank you, Jackson. Thank you. Well, Zach, looking at some of these other questions, who gives you hope for the future?
Who does?
Who? Like, who gives you hope for the future?
Man, I'm meeting with a group of pastors here in Pittsburgh, 15 pastors, lead pastors of churches, and we've all essentially started churches or succeeded in leadership. The major, like, I mean, all churches are major in our area, like in my opinion, but like to the outside, and we are such good friends. We're all completely different in theological upbringing. You know, when we pray, it's completely different. You know, you got like the ecumenical prayer, and then you got the tongue talker, and then you got the Baptist who's almost there, and you know, it's like hilarious, right? But we're unified and we have each other's backs. And what I'm noticing is there's a lot of men who are united, or like really, really united. It was a dream of our heart for years. Like, you could be friends as pastors, but when you say like, no, we legit have each other's backs. Like, I know I can call these guys and they'll be there for me in the middle of the night if I need it, you know? Yeah. And that's inspiring me right now. And I think it's something. Pittsburgh did a thing called the Pittsburgh Blessing. Did you guys ever see that?
No.
You should look it up on YouTube. Like, it went viral. It went crazy viral. But one of the guys, actually both of the guys are in it, but they just sang the blessing, but they incorporated all these different churches within Pittsburgh in it. And it was the unity movement. Then we had the Pittsburgh Praise movement, like not praise like praise, but like PRAYS. Oh, and yeah. We had, you know, pastors from like every denomination, basically every church.
Wow.
You know, just praying for a city together in Heinz Field.
Yeah.
And it was led by one of my really good friends, Matt Gabbert, at Southeast Asia Prayer Center. It was just a uniting event. So man, that's where my hope is right now. I'm like, it's going to be bright because we're united, you know?
Yeah. And that's really hard. I think it's so easy to just worry about the tasks and the roles and the duties that you have You're like, I don't have time for that. But you guys have made that a priority. You made time for it. And you're kind of walking out the commands that Jesus, you know, prayed for us in John 17.
Right. Yep. It's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's cool too. It's like men as a whole in today's society, and maybe I'm a little off on this, but you don't even see men supporting each other like that a lot. It's a lot of like, oh, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, stop being a baby. Once again, stop being a baby, stop being a sissy. You know, life's not that hard. Or, you know, rather than like, hey, man, I got to be there. Even outside of like, hey, man, how can I pray for you? It's like, hey, what can I do for you on a tangible level? Like you're saying, like, these guys literally have your back. Like, what can I do? I'll show up for you. What do you need? You need me to go get some groceries? You need me to go pick up your kid from school? Whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, hopefully something people could take away. Like, and me, myself here, even in North Carolina, since, you know, a lot of my friends are back in Florida, you know, finding that group of guys to have your back on a physical, tangible level.
Got to have community. That's what changed my life. Like, I was just too sissy to live for God. I grew up in a place, it's called Ambridge, and it's an old steel town. I got crap beat out of me in like my freshman year of high school. And I was like driving through, I was driving through that area, and I pointed to the area. I was like, hey kids, you see that spot right there? We're like, yeah. I was like, dad got the crap beat out of him right there. It was like this fifth year senior, you know? And like, honestly, man, like, I don't mean to make light of it. He's like, he's actually dead now. Like, he just was like, he's just crazy, right? He just looked at me and he's like, I'm just going to beat him up. You know, there's nothing I can do. I had like 10 friends around me and nobody did anything. Right.
Yeah.
And so terrible. I told my boys that, and they're like, well, what did you say to your friends? I said, I did. And I just got new friends, you know?
Yeah.
At that point, I'm like, man, I'm going to invest my life in people who really will be there for me. And I'm not going to play games about it. And if I had an epitaph, like right now, I'm just like, I would want it to be, Zach was a great friend. Mm. Like, I just want to show people what true friendship really is. And it's nice to have that reciprocated.
Mm. Yeah.
Especially with men who are typically competitive with each other. There's no competition in that room at all. We don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Care about each other. It's unbelievable.
It's the true work of the Lord.
Awesome.
A, the unit,
yeah.
B, the no ego, you know, like that's, man, unmatched, very cool.
Yeah, that's a blessing to have. Well, and you said, you know, there's the one thing you want people to know. You know, we're running short on time again. I don't know how it always goes so fast, but kind of leading into this of what legacy you want to leave with your church, with your kids, with your family, those that know you, what legacy do you want to leave?
Relational over transactional. You know, I just look at so much of life and so much of leadership. Of course, there's transactions, but man, my heart is that every person is known, loved, and challenged who comes across. Like, I want people to look at me one day and say, man, he was so honest with me, and he told me the truth, and he was there for me. Like, one, this is, I'll be even more concise. Like, people remember two things, guys, like when we're there for them and when we're not, you know? And I want people to remember that and be inspired by that, to be there, truly there for people in a time when, you know, we're the most disconnected in society we've ever been. I want to push back on that, you know?
Yeah. I think there's something to be said about that, because as I've moved to North Carolina, I think it's made me almost more intentional in people's lives and friends' lives, because now I'm distant from them, right? So I get a lot of windshield times. I call a lot of people. And I actually had a buddy that just came and visited, and I almost feel like him and I got closer since I moved here, because we've been great friends since middle school. But we were, you know, it's one of those things where you can go a little while without talking to somebody and get close, but he had some stuff going on in his life. And either way, we started reconnecting a lot more just over the phone and texting and all that. And so he actually came up here and we had a great time. And it was like, I think it almost made us closer as friends, just the distance, which is weird. But I think that, you know, that relational over transactional is huge.
Yeah, I read something a long time ago that said that World War II marriages were extremely strong because the men, there was a distance, but they wrote their hearts out in letters and they just sent it. And so there was more of an understanding of who the person actually was because of the distance.
Wow. Yeah.
Maybe we need to write handwritten letters more often instead of texting.
Probably do.
I'm just not going to talk to my wife at all. I'm just be like, hang on, stay over there. And I'm just going to write my heart out.
Yeah. Well, man, that's actually a great tip, though. Like, sometimes if I tell my wife how great she is, she's like, okay. But if I write it out, I'll write out the same words. And I've tried this before. I've said it to her, and then I wrote it on just like a cue card or an index card of me. Like, read this. And she starts crying when she reads it. But, like, you know, if I just say it, she's like, oh, thanks.
Thanks, babe. Pro tip, everybody. Write it down.
Write it down. Yeah.
That's right. I'm going to have to try that. I'll do that before Hannah listens to this. That way I can, like, get some points. So, you know, we all need that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. Zach, really appreciate you having on here. Means a lot to us. I know, especially it's late and don't get a lot of free time, especially with five kids running the house. But this last minute, anything you want to leave us with?
No, I mean, I just want to thank you guys. And I just appreciate your work. And I really want to continue conversation. I really love you guys, your energy. I really love the way that you guys are thinking about things and challenging guys out there. And I just think you're doing a really great job, and I want to be a part of it in some way. And, you know, anyway, I could support you guys, certainly through prayer, but like, I think I'd love to continue the conversation and enter into a good friendship with you both.
Yeah,
man. Honored to have you. I'm pumped for that. And
yeah,
appreciate your encouragement. I'm excited to see where it leads.
Yeah. Zach, that's really cool, man. Man, I just know you were generous with your time towards us tonight. I'm grateful for that, man. And I truly, truly am impacted and challenged and encouraged. Just me alone. So I promise, man, it was worth our while, man. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Zach, have a great night. Peace, everybody. Love y'all.
Love y'all.
See you guys. We'll be right back.